Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, no pictures of me banging a drum. Sorry. But what do veterans think of Bo Bergdahl and the prisoner exchange that won his release? We'll ask Paul Rieckhoff, founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and invite other of you vets to call in. And New York Times correspondent James Risen risks prison rather than disclose his sources for the book that he wrote about warrantless government surveillance before Edward Snowden. We'll talk to Adam Liptak from The Times, who is covering his colleague's case. But first, Joe Klein, political columnist for Time magazine. He who once worked for Bill Clinton, later wrote Primary Colors under a pseudonym about Bill Clinton, has an essay in Time today that anticipates the release of Hillary Clinton's new book next week. He calls it the first crucial moment in the 2016 presidential race, and his piece is called The Myth of Inevitability. Hi, Joe Klein. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. I never worked for Bill Clinton.
Oh, I thought you did something with him early on.
I have been an ink-stained wretch for 45 years consistently.
All right. So I don't know where I got that impression. I thought there was some involvement
because
early.
It's because the reporting was so good.
Maybe that was it. I think of them. I think of you to interpret them. That's what it is. Well, every politician who runs for president seems to release a book along the way. Why is this the first crucial moment of the 2016 campaign?
Because it's Hillary, because, you know, everybody's waiting to find out what she's going to be doing and what she's thinking. And everybody's going to be looking at this book to see whether there are any hints about whether she's going to run for president. And I suspect most people think she's going to. But how she's going to do it and where she's going to stand in relationship to the Democratic Party that is constantly evolving.
As you note, the section on Benghazi has been pre-released. How does she handle it?
Well, she takes ultimate responsibility, which is kind of hilarious because, you know, the handling of security in that consulate, which really wasn't that much of a consulate, is well below her pay grade, and then she blasts rightly blasts the Republicans who've been trying to make a scandal out of a tragedy.
You refer to the bizarre Republican campaign to find a scandal amid the tragedy. Is there no scandal if the administration spun it as an outgrowth of spontaneous demonstrations over an anti-Muslim video when it was really a planned 9/11 anniversary terrorist attack, and they spun it that way so it wouldn't look like a failure to prevent terrorism right in the middle of the Obama reelection campaign? Do you give no credence to that?
No, I don't. First of all, the terrorist attack by a local militia. Do you know how you translate militia into English? It's a street gang. It's a local street gang, and what Susan Rice was working off of were the CIA's talking points, which was their assessment of what had happened that night, and in all the reporting I've seen ever since, it seems quite likely that, word travels fast in the Middle East in this age of Twitter. And once the word of the documentary and the riots in Egypt, slipped across the border to Libya, people showed up at the installation and they saw there was minimal security. And so they went back and got their mortars.
If a militia is a street gang, it's the basis for our gun rights.
Yeah, I would say it wasn't a street gang 200 years ago, though. 250.
I hear you. And with respect to Hillary Clinton, is it not a failure, if not a scandal, on the State Department's part if there were calls from that consulate for better security before the incident and they went unheeded?
It's a problem in the State Department. Ultimately, she's in charge of the State Department. She took ultimate responsibility. But I don't know that there were, that this is, anything more than a CIA station that was placed under attack.
What do you think of Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State in general, other than Benghazi, which sucks up too much of the conversation about this? That's what the book is about, I gather. It's her time as Secretary of State. Was it more star power than effective diplomacy?
Well, there was certainly a lot of star power. I mean, I went on the road with her a couple of times, and she was probably the most effective Secretary of State in our lifetime when it came to public diplomacy. But in terms of strategic thinking, in terms of the nitty-gritty of diplomacy itself, of negotiating, I think, in the former case, all the big strategic thinking goes on in between Barack Obama's ears. This is the most closely held foreign policy since Nixon and Kissinger, and there's no Kissinger. She didn't have much leeway to show us what she would do strategically. There are some very interesting tidbits in Robert Gates' book, which is really a wonderful book. It's just an incredibly candid book. And one in particular that might give you a hint of where she was that when we had the Afghan surge and Stan McChrystal called for 40,000 troops, Gates was in favor of 30,000 troops, and he writes that Hillary was to his right. She was with McChrystal. She wanted 40,000 troops. So
we talked about that on this show, Gates and me. He practically endorsed her for president. I should play that clip.
Yeah. They were very close. And it's going to be interesting to see how her account of a lot of these meetings that Gates that Gates writes about in that book stack up.
Hillary has ducked, and listeners will open up the phones on this. Here's the way I'll frame the question, but you can call up and say anything you want. Is there anybody out there, either for a Democratic primary or for a fall election in 2016, is undecided about Hillary Clinton? Is there anybody who thinks you have anything more to learn about Hillary Clinton, either from a book that's about to come out next week on her years as Secretary of State, or in any future Democratic primary or general election debates? Do you not know everything you need to know about Hillary Clinton, one way or another, to feel one way or another about her as a presidential candidate? If there's anybody who'd answer no to that question, we would love to hear from you. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or anyone for Joe Klein, Time Magazine political columnist, whose new essay out today is about the myth of inevitability. She has ducked, Joe, the Bo Bergdahl debate to this point, as far as I could tell. Does she have?
Well, there has been a report, and it probably was leaked from her staff, that she was pushing for a much tougher deal when she was Secretary of State. And by the way, to answer your question, there's plenty that I want to know from her. I mean, really. Does she stand by her husband's policies with regard to the financial sector? He essentially deregulated Wall Street in the 90s and allowed things to go forward that led to the crash of 2008.
Well, that's the central question. I want to linger on that, because if there's a central question regarding whether Hillary Clinton will be inevitable or not in Democratic primaries in 16, that's it, isn't it? Is she too close to all those repealing Glass-Steagall and other deregulatory policies, allowing the go-go derivatives to go-go toward the financial crisis of 2008? Is that going to rub off on her from what her husband did? And how explicitly was she herself publicly identified with those policies?
I don't remember how specifically she was identified with them back in those days.
A senator from New York.
Oh, yes, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
That's 8 years of on the record,
yeah,
ending at the time the financial crisis, or 2 years before the financial crisis. No, 2008 was the end of her Senate term, right?
Yeah.
Was the 8 years leading up to it.
Right. That's absolutely right. I think that is a big question, and also how she's going to handle the economy and the slide of, the slide of the middle class. She's going to have to explain what she would do and what her emphasis is going to be. I mean, there was a clear path for Obama. I think the biggest mistake he made as president was when he came to office in the midst of that financial cataclysm, he could have said, okay, this presidency is now about recasting the American economy so that it produces, you know, more and better jobs. And that's all I'm going to think about. In the words of another former president, I'm going to focus on it like a laser beam. But he went off into, you know, health care and a bunch of other stuff and lost his focus. And, you know, you ask the American people, what is Barack Obama doing about jobs? And they have no idea. I could kind of tell you about all the initiatives he sent to the Congress that have been, you know, defeated by the Republicans in the House. But most Americans really don't know where he is on that.
Here's that Robert Gates clip, by the way, from our show when he was talking about Hillary being with him on the right flank of President Obama on the Afghan surge debate. And here's a little bit of what he said about her.
Well, let's just say that I have a lot of admiration for Hillary. It's expressed in the book. And with that, though, I would say that the Democrats probably don't need a Republican handicapping their race in 2016.
Ha, ha, ha. So Robert Gates, with his partly Republican background at least, wouldn't help her in Democratic primaries, where the real challenge, if there is a challenge, would come from a more populist anti-bank candidate like Elizabeth Warren or James Webb.
Or Brian Schweitzer, who, you know, is a fabulously entertaining politician and pretty smart, too, and worked really well in Montana. He not only lowered taxes, but he had like 77% approval, including a majority of Republicans. He knows how to speak Arabic.
I am looking at my board here. Let's see. Mostly... And, you know, as I say on the air, it's informal, unofficial, and thoroughly unscientific to take any poll based on who calls in on a question. But it looks like those who think Hillary Clinton is insufficiently populist on the banks are the ones who are generally calling in. So let's hear from one or two of those people. Susan in Great Meadows, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for having me this morning. I have a couple of thoughts on Hillary. I tried to gather them while I was listening to you, and the first one that comes to me is, you know, we haven't had an ambassador killed in Benghazi in 37 years. That's very scary. Number two, it's kind of surprising to me that everything that happens while Hillary was on board seems to disappear. For instance, her aide that was going to testify against her and was in a plane crash. You know, we never got any real answers about what happened to that gentleman. Well, and God rest his soul in peace.
Well, that obviously wasn't a call from the left. But what was that plank? Was that a Whitewater-related thing? Joe, do you know what she's talking about?
I don't remember. I know that there is something about the Clintons that causes, you know, right-wingers as opposed to conservatives, right-wingers, to concoct the wildest conspiracy possibilities. We haven't had an ambassador killed in Benghazi in 37 years, but we have had embassies attacked all over the world. And Chris Stevens was well known for being the sort of foreign service officer who, you know, was militantly in favor of the least security possible, because he wanted to be part of that community.
Susan, which was the plane crash you were talking about?
Yes.
Mina Airport,
you know,
in Arkansas?
I'm a housewife from New Jersey, so I can't really get right to the facts in my head. But there was just one other thing that really bothered me the other day. I was listening to the local radio. They were talking about the video for the Benghazi
attack
issue. And the announcer, the newscaster, said he would feel comfortable lying to the American people if it meant protecting our country. And I was appalled. You know, I was once a newscaster. I'm going back 30 years.
Uh-huh.
But the first rule of thumb was to present both sides and never lie. And for this newscaster to just say that,
yeah.
You know, he was condoning that video and that Susan Rice went on and said, you know, what she said about it. And I was shocked.
Susan, I'm gonna leave it there. Thank you. Joe Klein, is there an issue there as a policymaker? I think not as a journalist, where maybe there is no question, but as a policymaker, would you ever lie to the American people to protect the country? Would one?
I don't know whether I would actually lie, but there are things I would, you know, would keep secret. I mean, there are secrets that are absolutely necessary for our protection, and you know, if you're in the middle of rolling up a terrorist cell, and somebody asks you, are you in the middle of rolling up a terrorist cell? You say something like, we're always on guard for, you know, terrorist activity or something like that.
Joe Klein, Time Magazine, political.
But I came into this game when Eisenhower denied that we were flying over the Soviet Union, and then the Soviet Union shot one of them down.
Joe Klein, Time Magazine, political columnist with us, his essay out today on their website is that it's called The Myth of Inevitability. It's about the Hillary Clinton campaign, pegged to what he calls the first crucial moment of the 2016 presidential race coming next week with the release of Hillary Clinton's book about being Secretary of State. Here's another conundrum as I digress a little bit. This is a moment from Morning Edition today. Steve Inskeep was interviewing Amos Giora, who has done prisoner exchange negotiations for Israel. This is about Bo Bergdahl and releasing those five Taliban. And Steve asks him here point blank, is it acceptable to exchange prisoners with terrorists, even if it does lead to future attacks or kidnappings? This starts, I think, with his question.
Would you say that it's appropriate to negotiate a prisoner exchange like the one that got Bo Bergdahl back in U.S. custody, even if it does lead to later terrorist attacks?
Yes. And I understand the moral argument, but here's the difference. When I negotiate the release of a soldier, it's an immediate. I bring him home. The argument that of possible potential terrorist attacks down the road is amorphous, and it's a potential. It's not an immediate.
So, Joe Klein, there's a guy who's an academic now, I guess, once was a negotiator for Israel. Would a U.S. elected official like the president ever put it that way, point blank? Would Hillary Clinton ever put it that way if she was asked?
No, I don't think that a U.S. official ever would. If they did, they would be excoriated immediately by almost everybody, right? And in this case, you know, there's one possibility that hasn't arisen. This is the first example of us negotiating with the Taliban. In this case, you know, it was a successful negotiation, even if it may not have been the smartest one. It's hard to evaluate that yet. But I'm wondering whether this is the first step toward other negotiations. You know, maybe the question, more appropriate question would have been, is this, you know, do you think that further negotiations with the Taliban will come as a result of this? I think that, you know, there's a negotiation to be had here. When he was alive, Richard Holbrooke was desperate to talk to the Taliban. Now we are. And it may be that one or more of these prisoners hold the key to a settlement. I don't have any direct information of that, but it's just something I'm thinking about as someone who covered that war, went to Afghanistan a number of times, and is, you know, I've been pretty familiar with it in the past.
And there are indications in the way that this release was handled that the Taliban are trying to establish themselves as a legitimate political entity, not just a terrorist band of, you know, ideological thugs in Afghanistan. So we'll see if they move down that road.
It's also
further.
I mean, you also have to go to the various factions. This was
right.
The Haqqani faction,
right,
which has been far more deadly and active than the main faction, the Quetaschura.
But what were you starting to get at earlier when you said that in these negotiations, which we're told have lasted 3 years, that Clinton, as Secretary of State, was for driving a harder bargain than some others in the administration? Do you know details of that?
Well, yeah. I think only what I read in the papers, but I don't read anything in the papers.
What's a paper?
No, online there was a report yesterday that Clinton had pushed for fewer Taliban to be released. I think it was 3 rather than 5, and under stricter conditions.
40% tougher than President Obama, Hillary Clinton, 2016. Tedla in Flushing is, I think, our only undecided
yes,
on Hillary
morning.
Caller. Hi, Tedla.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. I mean, Hillary Clinton is a very intelligent and capable person. But for me, now about nobody wants to hear too much about the Bushes and the Clintons. I mean, this country has been divided since that time, since the Bush time, since the Clintons time. So why do United States need division at this moment? The problem is not about Taliban or Afghanistan. The big problem for United States is overall international politics. China is a big factor. We need a new vision, new young people, either women or men, we don't care. But we have to separate the Bushes and the Clintons from this political, you know, struggle coming in 2016. We need new people and new vision for our country.
That was exactly the argument that got Obama the Democratic nomination over Hillary in 2008. Did that work for you in terms of foreign policy? Tedla?
Yeah, I mean the foreign policy now, is nobody expected that the situation in Russia and in China will come to this level. But now the problem is no longer Afghanistan or Iraq or Taliban. The big problem now we are going to face is in Southeast Asia and in the Soviet Union former areas. I mean,
yes.
This is not going to go away very easy. We need a united vision for this country. If you want to lead the country, the world, otherwise we'll be left, believe it or not.
Is there any particular candidate that you're interested in? I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm interested with a Boston professor. I don't know her name. She's a senator. She's a very articulate person, and she's a capable woman,
yes.
Believe it or not.
Elizabeth Warren, you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, that's true.
Tedla, thank you very much. That's so fascinating to me, Joe.
Yes.
That here's that same argument, as I raised, that people used about, for Obama against Hillary in 2008, that the Clintons and the Bushes represent dividing the country. Well, look how divided the country is, I would say despite rather than because of Barack Obama. But it wasn't
going to... The interesting thing is that the Clintons and Bushes are the moderate,
yes.
The moderates in their respective parties. And, you know, one thing that I would like to see, and, I really think that I'd love to see some new creative faces and thinking in both parties. I'd actually like to see the Republicans return to the sanity that they displayed when George H.W. Bush was president. But I think that there is this dangerous tendency we have in this country now to constantly be looking for new faces and to downplay experience. That's what lost it for Hillary Clinton in 2008. Instead of running as the first woman, she ran as this person of towering experience. But we really do need to have experienced, excellent managers in the White House. And, my biggest gripe with Obama has been that he isn't a very good manager, hasn't been a very good manager.
And to the content of Tedla's call on what's going on around the world, I mean, the global debate right now is whether the U.S. has become too weak. Russia and China are rubbing our noses in it in various ways. What do you think is the Clinton report card on that as Secretary of State?
Well, we'll see. I mean, one thing that will come up in the Democratic primaries is trade. And our position vis-a-vis China on that. You know, I go on these road trips around the country, and foreign policy questions almost never come up, with the exception of one, China. People are always asking, what is the president's position on China? What should we be doing about our trade deficit with them? Is there any way that we can regain manufacturing? Those are the kind of questions that actual human beings ask about foreign policy. And, you know, I haven't seen the president really elucidate his position on those issues.
We have 30 seconds left. I noticed in the article you are careful to couch it repeatedly in the phrase, if she runs, and things like that. Any reason to think she won't?
Yeah, she may have had it with the circus. You know, it's it really, I've spoken to her. I spoke to her after health care came, you know, fell apart for her, Hillary care. And she was really battered by the process. I mean, she went on this tour, and people were cursing her out and spitting at her. You know, the fact is she's a regulation human being, too. And, you know, at a certain point in your life, enough is enough. And the other question out there is her health. And I have no reason to believe that she's in terrible health, but, you know, we're about the same age, and things start breaking down.
Joe Klein, not breaking down yet. As a Time Magazine political correspondent, his piece out today anticipates the release next week of Hillary Clinton's book and calls it the first crucial moment of the 2016 presidential race. Joe, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, we will meet New York City's new health commissioner, Dr. Mary Bassett. Consistent with the de Blasio way, is there a progressive way to be health commissioner of New York City? Stay with us.